The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to another week of The Drive. It's Monday, and, it hasn't even really felt terribly like a Monday, except for the traffic. But It is what it is. And that is busy. The traffic is tough. Another hot day, but that's the way it is here in August. It's the dog days, if you will. But it is mock week.
It is mock week
for Auburn football. We had the press conference,
but it wasn't a mock press conference.
No, it was a real press conference with Alex Golish a little earlier. Brian and I are sitting next to each other and going, what are we going to talk about?
And then we all came up with about 10 good questions.
And then it turned out to be 30 pretty interesting minutes with Alex Golish. Yeah. I mean, because we just talked to him this past Wednesday after Auburn's second scrimmage. But since then, they've had a few more days practice, had alumni weekend, and now they're into mock week, where they're going to do everything they can to try to establish exactly how each week's going to go through football season.
Yeah, just kind of establish a routine, the players, the coaches. They want to treat this like a real game week and not – put stuff off or do some things different. They want every player and every coach on this staff to treat it like this is Baylor week, just to get them ready for the real Baylor week, which will start, on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the first question Jason asked him, about it. Where did it come from, and what was the plan? And it makes perfect sense. I mean, he was talking about this way. You don't want to get to game week and think, all right, we're doing this, and I have to adjust.
Right.
You'd rather go ahead and get into the pattern. We're going to do – here's what we're going to do. I mean, and you can tell, again, look, Alex Golish is as detail-oriented a coach
really is.
As I can ever recall at Auburn.
Yeah, and you said where it came from. It came from Oklahoma State when he was a GA there in 2008.
Well, he said that came because Coach Gundy, Mike Gundy, they had some things that didn't go the way they wanted it. And so he said it was crazy. Yeah. I can see it driving Alex Golish crazy. I can see, all right, he thinks he understands. Then you're having to look, you have to adjust in game, and there are other things you have to adjust to. You'd like to make things as routine as possible all the time. And it's sort of like, I was talking with Doug Amos a little bit ago about this. It's sort of like, in game, you want to practice enough that you don't think. You're not having to think. You're just reacting. You're just sort of going out there and playing the game.
Right. You know the reads. You get it done. Boom, and you're ready to just play ball.
And that's exactly what he's thinking of here. So they know what they're going to be doing on Sunday and Monday and every day leading up to it. You're even going to have a mock game against the scout team this Saturday.
Right. Where they just run through every scenario they can think of that might come up on Saturday in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So, this is new to me. And if other Auburn coaches have done this, it's never been discussed.
I've never heard of them doing it for the week. I mean, we've had game walkthroughs, those type things.
Yeah.
Usually, and
that's another thing you can go back to.
Don Dunn said, usually that was just to check the headsets, things like that, just to make sure that everybody knew how to get into the stadium and that the headsets were working.
This is a great example, and I've written about it, and we talked about it, his just attention to detail with everything inside and out the program, looking for those small ways to have an advantage. And he talked today, he said, Baylor can do the same thing. We're hoping to just do it better, to give us give us an edge. Right?
Well, anything. So that's what's going on this week for Auburn. In the meantime, more news from the judge's decision in Louisiana, and LSU is adding two players. This is crazy.
Well, they joined the NFC South. I don't know if you saw that.
Well, they should. my goodness. something I never thought I'd see, and that is graphics with NFL players, you know, being listed as commitments and additions to college teams, as LSU has picked up two players who were in NFL camps this past week.
Former Saints D lineman Xavier Harris is the latest,
and he
was at Ole Miss.
Yeah,
right?
This is going to be really interesting.
Just like was it Jay, the tight end? The tight end was at Ole Miss too. This going to LSU. Yeah,
yeah. So these are players. The SEC has a rule. The SEC has a rule where you cannot transfer in conference.
Yep.
And I'm sure LSU's position is, well, they didn't come directly from Ole Miss. They went from Ole Miss to an NFL training camp.
To LSU.
It's
Daquan Wright is the tight end who's already committed or said he's going there or whatever or about to. And Jack Pyburn is another one that
– Of course, Jack was at –
he was at Florida and then LSU last year.
So he could come back to LSU.
If he doesn't make the Bucs. He's been with the Bucs. That's a guy that Auburn recruited pretty heavily.
He was committed to Auburn for a short time when he was like a sophomore.
Yeah, yeah. I remember talking to him during recruiting and all that, and I think he really liked Auburn, but I think Florida was always his school he wanted to go to.
Yeah, because he grew up in Florida.
Yeah, I think after he graduated from Florida, maybe he decided to go to LSU last year to finish out his career, and now he's got one more opportunity possibly.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is just crazy. It is crazy that players can, you know, that can sign NFL deals. Now, I understand, I mean, what the argument that was made to the Louisiana judge was that if these players had known they were going to get – they could get a fifth year,
and
they wouldn't have gone.
Right.
Because these – so far, it hasn't been – highly drafted, big money contract
of course
guys.
Not, because they're getting paid in the NFL, right?
Right.
But
although, guys, get this now, I was before I came on with Doug, I was listening to him, and they were looking at reports of what the top five college quarterbacks are getting, as compared to the top five rookie NFL quarterbacks are getting. Your top five quarterbacks in college are
more.
Going to receive more than your five.
Just start out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and Fernando Mendoza's getting $10 million.
Right.
But the rest of those quarterbacks, I mean, it goes down to Carson Beck.
Mm-hmm.
Carson Beck is getting $1.3 million this year. Carson Beck's replacement is getting $6.5 million at Miami this year.
Wow.
So it's like, where would you rather be?
Yeah.
Would you rather make 1.3 or 6.5?
I'd take just a little piece of either
one.
Yeah,
no kidding. But
I mean personally.
But that is just amazing.
And on top of that, Bill, on Tuesday in Birmingham, SEC presidents and ADs are getting together for 2 days to, according to Ross Dellinger of Yahoo Sports, to discuss and explore an SEC governance-only model where they break away from the NCAA with governance-only, not competition, which is that next step.
Yeah, to have your own rules.
Right. They failed, mostly failed as far as the getting the bill passed.
Yeah, they're
right?
not going to get – that's not going to happen. And, right. and see, that is one thing I was reading a little earlier. You know, the SEC rule about not transferring in conference, that's an SEC-only rule.
Right.
Is the SEC going to – are they going to come down on LSU?
I don't know. I mean, again, if they do, they're opening up.
Are they going to let that gray area go of, well, you didn't come directly, you know, you didn't pass go or whatever. I mean,
It's one of those situations where you're putting us, you know, if you try to go after LSU, you get sued, you lose, and it's wide open.
Yep.
Or you sit back and do nothing, and maybe it is still wide open. Maybe lose. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the thing is, if you let it slide because of that technicality of the fact that they didn't go directly from Ole Miss to LSU,
an interesting
then it shouldn't happen again. Because what you can do after this year, I mean, I would guess the only recourse the NCAA is going to have is after this year, all right, it's 5 for 5, but if you sign a pro deal, you're done. Because these players didn't have the option of getting that fifth year.
And next year there's not going to be any class of
2023s
because they've already gotten their fifth year.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
So this is a one-year thing more or less. Mm-hmm. We don't know what other things could come of it, right?
Well, I'm surprised. We were talking about it before the press conference today. that we haven't heard some 21 guys go, well, wait a minute. What about us? Because, I mean, you are seeing a lot of lawsuits that are wanting to collect from well past the last few years. Yeah.
And, you know, the other thing is if they do go, the SEC does break away, government's only model, right? You know, and they set, you know, strict guidelines on you know, capping roster cost and everything, you know, putting budgets on schools, right? Mm-hmm. And they can probably stop transfers within conference, but that there's no way they can stop.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Can only they could only be able to affect in conference.
Right. They can't
transfers.
Stop players leaving for the Big Ten or
any
ACC or anywhere else. Right.
No.
So that they can't address that, and how much they can dictate terms of budgeting and all those things, we'll see. I know they think they can. Right, that's their belief, but that's probably going to be challenged too at some point.
It's all everything. Everything depends on the members of whatever organization, the NCAA, the SEC, agreeing and then abiding by those rules.
That's the biggest problem.
The biggest problem right now is that there's always going to be.
Some exception.
Somebody who goes, hey,
we got to help our team.
Yeah. This player could help us if we challenge this. If, you know, if he can find a friendly judge, then this player could help us win. And like, look, Lane Kiffin right now is one of the most, he always has been one of the most polarizing characters in sports. And he definitely is now because LSU is out front. With the professional players back.
I'll be honest. I'm not a Lane Kiffin fan, but if I am a alumni booster fan of a school, okay, and we're in the Wild West era of college athletics,
which we are,
I would rather my coach and my AD and my administration do whatever it takes to win than want to play by the rules and be Mr. Nice Guy. I mean, I know people are going to be mad at LSU.
Oh, absolutely,
and don't like
they
it.
Are.
Especially but they're
Ole Miss. Nobody more than Ole Miss,
but
right
they're
now.
Playing to win.
That's right. I mean, and look, Alex Golish even said it a while back when I guess it wasn't anything. It wasn't this that we were talking about specifically, but he was saying, you know, if somebody can do it, then we need to do it. You need to know who's available, and you need to take advantage. You don't need to sit back and let your opponents do that, and that's what LSU's doing.
Yes, they are. They are ahead of everything. They
are
pushing
the
bubble.
And that's what Lane said. Lane said, if somebody, why not us?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure everybody's mad about it and nobody likes it, but if it was you and you were competing for a national championship and those players made the difference, I bet you'd be pretty happy about it come January. So until there are real enforceable guidelines, this is the way college football is going to be.
College athletics, period.
Yes.
Because now with this, the Charles Bediakos of the world, you know, players like that in basketball are like, forget that. We're going to find another judge.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So I'm just not convinced that the same stuff won't happen if SEC and the Big Ten are governing themselves or ACC. You'll have a school or two
absolutely.
Who want to fight it, and they'll try to put in rules that says if you sue or you try to change something, you can be stripped of something or whatever, but a judge can knock that down. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, to me, it's always been let's set things up so we collectively bargain, then you know you have enforceable plans in place and there's none of this other stuff going on.
Right now, why would the players want to bargain?
You can make that argument.
The players have all the power right now.
You can make that argument. I can understand that. But I still think there's a path forward in that. But NCAA football has lost so much bargaining power by going down this path for the past 6 or 7 years.
Well, for the past couple of decades, really. I mean, they've just put blinders on and hoped that hope that things would go away. Just like if we ignore it, you know.
But I think everything that's happening today was foreseeable 5, 6, 7 years ago.
I agree.
And instead of just fighting it and trying to dictate things,
saying okay, players can get money for their likeness. They players can be compensated. for their likeness. If they had just done that, I don't know that we'd be where we are.
I just think
right
it's been
now.
A failure by the leadership and the SEC.
And it's
Big
been multiple
10.
Leaderships yep. at oh, yeah. the NCAA
yes.
now.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah. So, all right. We're just underway. We'll talk about what Alex Golish had to say. It's actually, we've got college football coming up this week. A couple of conference games. ACC has some conference
week
games.
Week zero.
That is right. No SEC games.
Yeah,
this week.
And honestly, the games are not awesome.
They're
but
not terribly
it is college
exciting,
football.
But it's college football.
Right. Maybe someone will turn out good. You don't know.
Yeah, right? That's right. We'll talk about that and more. Love for you to join in. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. As we're just underway, Bill, Brian Matthews, MauburnSports.com. Got Brandon at the controls here on the Monday Drive.
Now, more of The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday Drive, Bill. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com. Brandon's in at the controls as Drew's got
three B's.
Huh, that's right. The three
back
B's
again.
Here on a Monday. That's the way it will be on Monday.
All right.
So welcome in, everybody. Love to hear from you. We were talking about the semi-pro college football, which is, I mean, it's professional now. Look, the guys are getting paid. Supposedly not for their performance, but they do.
Well,
the thing is, tell me.
Let's stop pretending.
Tell me if somebody comes in, has a great year, they're not going to get paid a whole lot more.
Exactly.
And it ain't
yes.
going to be just because, they're on a whole lot more billboards.
Right, yeah. They've got some beauty tips and look a lot better now, right?
Yeah. Well, they can afford to.
Yeah, that's
they
true.
They can afford to if they do. But yeah. Before we get into some of the Alex Golish stuff, I thought it was crazy reading some of the comments, some of the stories I was mentioning Ole Miss. No, nobody hates Lane Kiffin more than Ole Miss right now.
Yeah,
there's no question. But reading the story where Ole Miss has admitted that they went and got the FBI to come in and sweep their buildings because they were convinced that Lane Kiffin was bugging their buildings to try to steal. Yeah. Not just their players, but their coaches.
I think there's a lot of ways you can make fun of both sides for this. It's Lane Kiffin.
You're
I guess
not
nothing surprises me, but
no.
Ole Miss, acting like this after they, worship that guy for,
and well now
and forgave now, so, everything.
And yeah. Now they're going, well, of course he's doing it.
Yeah.
It's like, what they're doing? They're admitting, yeah, we were doing it.
Right.
We were yeah. Maybe skirting the rules a little bit now because that's what this this slime ball does.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who they love. So, yeah. We will see. I mean, I don't know how these players aren't going to be able to play now.
Oh, I'm with you. I mean, maybe the courts, it's what can happen to the courts and it's
well,
just
the NCAA
hard,
yeah. can try to find a court that's friendly to them and then it'll end up in the Supreme Court or something by that time, though the season will probably be over.
Yeah, it's just I agree 100%. I think it's just going to be tough for this not to take place, and I do think this is more of a 1 year
I hope
thing for this.
It
actual...
should be. You know, you would hope that once this that nobody will be able to say, well, we didn't know we were going to get a fifth year.
But you could have guys that have played 4 years go to the NFL, get released, and want to come back if this precedent's set. Precedent.
Well, I mean, I think eventually, you have to. There has to be a point where, all right, you did forego the rest of your eligibility by making this decision.
But now we're talking about what is eligibility?
That's right.
Opportunity to earn a living,
because
right?
This is now something, that basketball is trying to get sorted out as well.
Yeah.
I mean, it could get to the point where, well, how far can you go? Is it just training camp or are you riding the bench?
Right.
If you don't like the fact that you're still in the minors and you want to go play at a school where you've got better facilities and better amenities than you'd have in a single A, double A.
I mean, if we're
franchise.
Just looking like antitrust issues, right? The opportunity for you to earn the best living you can, and you still have a year or two left of eligibility in college, I mean, you can make the case that you're allowed to come back and use those years up if you know they want you. I don't know. I'm not saying that's the right thing.
No. And I just wonder, and then what does that do? I have these crazy thoughts that then the NFL Players Association and Major League Place, but you know, the professional Players Associations are going to go, well, hold on.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. We didn't get that opportunity. Right. We should be getting that opportunity now at this level. Everybody should be a free agent every year.
Yeah. It's wild, right? But of course those organizations have collective bargaining.
They do.
Right. So
they do, but those agreements come up for
they do.
They,
and
they
as we know
every so often,
as we know
baseball's
in baseball
coming up on it.
That this is going to be one of the biggest ones in baseball in a while, right?
You're not kidding.
I mean, we got to go back. When was the I felt so bad. It was Montreal was running away with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the Expos.
When was that?
The
How long
Expos.
Ago was that?
Oh, my goodness. 30.
Has it been that long?
Yeah.
Am I that old?
Yes.
Gosh. I guess Andre Dawson.
I'm older, so. Yeah.
Andre Dawson Sr. was a part of that team back then, right?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Well, Vladimir Guerrero.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Man. Yes. But, yeah, it's been – I mean, they've had work stoppages here and there, but this seems like it's set up to be a big one.
I agree. I think this one could be really, really bad. But I just wonder if what's going on in college might not affect some of the bargaining at the
it
professional
might.
Levels.
I mean, if you can't have enough players to fit in your minor league baseball system, you got to figure something out. I mean, those teams got to have players, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just take them off the street. I don't know. Same with practice squads for football.
And I heard some folks saying, well, you know, but these players they're gonna be ridiculed because they weren't good enough to. No, they're not. Not if they play well enough to help you win.
Right. Yeah. They're gonna get paid. They have a chance to go back to college, which is free housing, free food,
the time of their lives.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah, no question. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So It continues to be wild. We'd love your thoughts on that. All right, let's turn to Alex Golish today.
Yes.
I mean, he started off talking about the mock week, but then he got into some. There were quite a few interesting, interesting thoughts from Alex Golish today. I mean, what sort of struck you? What were the key points in your mind from the press conference?
Well, the details of mock game week, which we already kind of talked about, was interesting. I did write about that today, so you can get that there at auburnsports.com. He talked a little bit about a question I asked was about analytics in the book, right?
Going by the book or going by your gut.
Right, and he said that in most cases, goes by his gut.
In game.
Right.
Yeah, he said they've got that theoretical book, and they'll study the analytics all week as to situations and the opponent and everything. But obviously, I mean, I couldn't agree more that when you're in the flow of the game, it's how are things going? Because analytics may say, oh, you go for it here. But not if you know your offensive line's struggling or you don't have a play that you feel confident in making that first down or making that play.
Exactly. He said the only time they really likes to go by the book is term of two-point plays in terms of how many drives you feel like you've got before you get into a two- or four-minute situation.
Mm-hmm.
So other than that, though, I think, like you said, it depends on the game, the situation, what they're doing offensively, defensively, all those things. You know, play a part. It's like, do you kick this 52-yard field goal at this time of the game, or do you punt? Well, what if the wind's blowing, you know, in your kicker's face? You know, you got to take that into account. You just can't go by the book, right?
Or what if some of it could be is your defense playing great and
you don't mind
taking a shot and giving them really good field position. Or if your defense really struggling and you know, then maybe you do go for it because you're trying to keep them off the field.
Right. What if your snapper broke his finger on the previous series and you got to get a new snapper in there? Maybe you're not quite ready to try that out from 50-something yards. So I just think there's a lot of things. I just hate coaches that go by the book and then that's what the book said.
I thought that was funny because Golish said, won't hear me doing that.
Yes, which is great to hear. Again, personal responsibility, attention to details, all there with Alex Golish and everything he talks about, everything he does.
Yeah, I mean, we're just waiting for the proof on the field now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because every single thing has sounded and appeared to be right on track.
But we also have to keep perspective that Auburn is not going to field the most talented rush in the SEC this year. They have 60 newcomers. It's not going to look perfect. Even though you have a great attention to detail, it's still not going to look, you know, it's never going to look perfect in a football game because you got another team on the.
That's right. I mean, you're not determining everything. I mean, the other team does. But I'll say this: Alex Golish hadn't shied away from feeling from letting you know that he feels like this team has the talent to be able to compete.
Yeah, that's no doubt. I think he believes in Byron Brown a lot. Who he talked about again today?
Oh, he did. I thought his comments on Byron and Byron's attention to detail.
Yes, like a coach.
Yeah. Well, he said, I have every minute of every day planned out. Byron Brown has every minute of every day planned out.
And I think he had mentioned this before. I don't know if we talked about it on the radio before about Byron sometimes getting there at the complex before the coach and then taking the picture of his parking spot, I guess, and sending it to him, you know, like, oh, I'm here and you're not, you know, just joking around. Like, but that's just Byron's attitude, right? And he said that you know,
he said it's only happened a time or two.
Right. But he said Byron is at that level where, you know, the other quarterbacks follow him very closely and try to emulate him a lot. And also the tight ends and wide receivers are the same way. He's just a natural-born leader, and everybody tries to follow in his footsteps, which is so – I think that's going to be so big for Golish's first year at Auburn, just having somebody like him on and off the field, everything. That was just such an important move to have that for this first season.
Without question. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Just a quarter of the way in about an hour. It's Monday, so we'll get Brian's musings. But until then, we're wide open. Love for you to join us. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar as we continue with the Monday Drive.
Churn up some more yardage on The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Monday edition of The Drive. Bill, Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com here in the studio, taking your calls, questions, comments, 334-321-1390. Well, look, as you were saying as we went to break, how big, how important it is. Look, Auburn knows who its quarterback is. They know who their offensive leader is. And he knows what to expect from his play caller. From his head coach. I mean, they've been together for the last 3 years with Joel Gordon calling the plays and Alex Golish as the head coach. He's got his center and another starting offensive lineman and his top receivers from last year, his top running back from last year, his tight end. I mean, so much of that offense is coming in, and so that is one of the things. And Alex Golish was talking about it today. They're light years ahead of where, you know, you would normally be in year one because of that.
Yes.
Because of all the familiarity and continuity that there is. Meanwhile, quite a few other schools have been having quarterback battles.
They have.
And just over the last, over the weekend and today, we're learning, most of them not surprises.
Right.
Who the starting quarterbacks are going to be, interestingly enough, for quite a few of the teams on Auburn's schedule.
Right. And I don't have a list of all of them, but I think Alabama's starting the freshman?
Keelan Russell is a – no, he's
a sophomore. He played a little bit as a freshman, right? Yeah. But a highly recruited kid, I think.
Very
he's a five-star.
Recruited. Right.
Florida is starting
Florida
the Georgia
is
Tech
start
transfer.
Aaron Filo, who has started one game in his career, as we talked about. It was against Gardner Webb, but that was announced over the weekend. Faison Brandon is the freshman at Tennessee, mm-hmm. the highly touted freshman out of North Carolina, is going to be their starter.
Is Vanderbilt named there?
No,
they've got the true freshman.
I was just looking. He's expected. They're expected to name a true freshman as their starter.
Yeah.
But I mean, my goodness, look at all these teams that Auburn will play this year. They're going to have first year starters, and you know, most of them young first year starters.
I mean, you look at that first month. Jared Curtis, if he is a starter at Vanderbilt, was a 5-star. They flipped him from mm-hmm. Georgia right before signing day.
Right.
You mentioned Florida with the transfer who started one game. So there's opportunities there. You know, Jordan-Hare Stadium is a pretty tough place to play. Even when the team's down, that place fills up and gets pretty rowdy. And if this team can go out there and play good and people start feeling, you know, good about his chances, those two games, especially Florida at night, could end up being really, really great atmospheres.
Yeah, just, I mean, of course, everybody's looking forward to that one. It's like, got to take care of the first two, but I mean the opportunities are there, and then so I mean you'll get a couple of inexperienced quarterbacks in your first two SEC games, and then you're going to head on the road, and now Tennessee and Brandon will have played some schools, because Tennessee's got Texas the week before they go to Atlanta, take on Georgia Tech in week two before they host Texas the week before Auburn comes in. So he'll be a little more battle tested, but still a young guy.
Yeah.
And coming off a big ball game the week before when Auburn goes in there. So, I mean, you've got to feel like that's something that DJ Durkin is going, yeah, this is good. Because again, Alex Golish pointed out again today, part of, I guess it was when I asked him about the offensive line.
Yes, he did.
And he said, yeah, don't think that the offensive line hasn't won its share of the battles, but going against the DJ Durkin defense.
He absolutely loves Auburn's edges. I mean, he can't stop talking about them. He doesn't really mention them a lot by specific name, but he just talks about how.
Today, I mean, he's more and more lately.
Yeah,
he has just raved about the play of the Auburn edges, the pass rush that Auburn's getting from the outside. And, man, that's something that it's great to hear. Yeah. I can't wait to see it.
And we're talking Jared Smith.
Well, he did say Jared Smith and Deshaun Womack.
Deshaun Womack and then Chris
Murray.
Chris Murray. I think those three are the main guys there that are mm-hmm. really terrorizing the offense right now, which is –
Yeah, you said the offensive line's really looking forward to going against somebody other than Jared Smith and Deshaun Womack.
Now, my skeptical.
Yeah, what you worry about is, are your tackles going to have trouble against other edges?
That remains the most worrisome part of this team, I think, going into the season. Yeah. The most unknown thing, right? Five new starters, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Some journeyman types.
I don't know. I mean, Joe Simmons was a multi-year starter there at James Madison. And some of his teammates went on and started for a national champion in Indiana last year.
Very true. Yep.
And he was the left tackle for them. Stanton Ramil has started since he was a freshman at Michigan State.
True.
Being healthy has been his problem.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, just because of what we see. Look, here's the thing I have to – you know, remind myself and some other people at times, just because Auburn's offensive line has struggled the last few years and things haven't worked out with some highly touted transfers, doesn't mean that they're all going to flop.
No.
Because, I mean, there have been quite a few players who have transferred to other schools and have done very well on the offensive line.
They have.
So, you know, you hope that it was just, well, either the system or – whatever.
Yeah. Evaluations, yeah.
Because, look, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Xavier Chaplin's going to be the starting left tackle at Florida State this year.
Sounds about right.
So, I mean, you know, and they're counting on him.
He'll probably have a great year.
He'll probably do a great job protecting Ashton Daniels.
He'll probably be an All-American, yeah. I will say this about the offensive line. They're getting the heck coach out of them every day. They really are. There's three offensive line coaches.
And they're getting challenged like crazy from the defense.
They're going to get everything out of what they got. We'll see what that is, you know, come September and especially October, really see what that is. But they're going to get the best out of them.
And it appears, at least the last time we were able to see them line up, with Jacob Strand really really coming on.
Yeah. Is he at right guard? Is that I got I'm trying to go left to right. Is it left guard?
He's at left, because so Cole Skinner's at right, right.
Joe, Jacob, Cole Skinner,
and
Stanton. Right. Yes.
Which is an experienced group.
It is. A lot of starts
not at Auburn and not all together, but right. At least a couple of them have played together, starting with the center.
Yep.
And we have heard, we've also heard, and when we talk to them, I understand why they're saying this. These are bright guys. I mean, Jacob Strand, we know, had to pass a ridiculous number of hours to graduate from Oregon State to be able to play here. When you just talk to Stanton Ramil or Joe Simmons or Cole Skinner, you go, man, these are sharp guys.
Definitely.
And they need to be to understand and be able to play in this pace on the offensive line.
And the pace, having a quarterback that knows everything and is also big and runs the ball really well.
That's going to help them.
All those things are going to be advantages for the offensive line. Right. So whatever deficiencies they have, that's one way to even some of those out. So that's a positive. We'll see, though. There's no way I'm going to go into the season expecting anything above average for that group. But maybe I'll be surprised.
Heck, if they're average to just slightly above average, then Auburn's got a chance to be
really good,
much better offensively.
Yeah, I agree. Absolutely agree with that. That they don't have to be.
I mean, when you do have when you've got a guy like Byron Brown at quarterback,
right.
and another one of the things Alex Gullish talked about today that he seemed very content with. The size of his guys when they're in he was asked about short yardage red zone and wanted to know which one, but I mean it would apply to both. The size when he was talking red zone,
the size of the tight ends, running backs,
and
wide
obviously
receivers.
And Byron.
Yeah.
I mean he's got big receivers, he's got big tight ends, he's got and Auburn's offensive line is gonna be as big as anybody's. They're gonna average the average in the SEC last year was around 6'5". 310, Auburn's going to average that or a little better.
Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to, you know, it's not like Auburn's going to be undersized anywhere. So
I want to believe, Bill, but, buddy, I got to see it. Yeah.
I know. I mean, I like what we've seen in practice, though.
Yeah.
I mean, and we have not heard that the defense has just crushed him every time out.
Right.
I mean, he's right. The offense has made some plays. And that's something we haven't heard a lot about that the last few years.
Yeah, and we've heard back to Byron. We've heard about his accuracy, his downfield throwing.
Everybody raves about his deep passing.
Yep. So, that's an area that Auburn hasn't done well in. To be honest with you, they've had a lot of guys running open. They've just misfired so many times. And I think they've got receivers now, even on a ball that's not thrown quite as well, that will go out and compete for a ball and win it. So,
where it helps to have those big guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's where the Keyshawn Singleton, the Jeremiah Koger, even Christian, Chaz
Nimrod.
Yeah. I was like, I like Christian Neptune too, but I mean, Chaz Nimrod's a guy I was trying to think of there. So, I guess same initials, right? I didn't even think about that. Yeah. He could be a slot guy at 6'2", 205.
And maybe the fastest guy on the team. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a heck of a matchup like that.
Yeah. So, he was asked about red zone and offensive line and he praised the rush guys and the depth on the defensive line, and that's another thing that was a question coming into the fall. Brian was the depth. I mean, because you knew it's like great to get Dallas Walker back. Loved everything you'd seen from Cody Sigler. Everything after that was young. And you didn't really know, are you going to be able to build enough depth there on the defensive line? But that's one thing that really has been impressive to watch. And is Vontrell and how he builds depth and just plays numbers. Remember, just what was it, 3 or 4 years ago? We're like, why aren't we playing anybody else on the defensive line?
Right. Yes, I do remember those days. It was interesting. But going back to Dallas Walker, I mean, I'm sure you've talked about it. But after the scrimmage. The first player the coach mentioned was the nose guard. Yeah. I have never in my 26, 27 years covering a football team had that happen after a scrimmage, right? It just doesn't.
No, I mean, you're right.
Especially an offensive coach.
Right. Who's got a proven guy there at center.
Yes. So, so that to me was great. Love to hear it because I love watching the defensive line. It's my favorite position.
And Dallas Walker doesn't look like he did a year ago.
No, he doesn't. And obviously, we don't get to see him play as much as we'd like to, but he's playing pretty well. And yeah, they have found some depth there on the defensive line. I think Buddy Mathis has stepped up a lot.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that's really had a good.
Like Darren Smith, I think Malik Autry, is that right?
Yeah,
yeah, has stepped up.
And Jordan Crawford, we heard after I guess it was after the first scrimmage or something, it was really good.
So they got guys they can roll in and out there, and I think that's allowed them to use Cody Sigler at defensive end a little bit and move some guys around a little bit. Darren Smith at defensive end, so it just gives them a lot more options in there.
And I think, you know, and it's funny, Golish today said, you know, he's not one to praise a lot. Well, he does as much or more than a lot of coaches.
Yeah.
And a lot of coaches just tell you the bad.
Yeah.
You know, they won't tell you the guys that are good. But, I mean, he'll tell you the good and the bad, which I really like. Because I remember, was it after the second scrimmage when he mentioned St. Farrier? Mm-hmm. And he said, he's inconsistent. When he's good, he's really good. But yeah, there are times when he's not. But what that tells you is they feel like there's something there.
Right. Right. So he's probably in the playing rotation, too, or close to it. And he also gives little tidbits, like Sam Turner, I guess it was today.
Yeah. When he was asked about, you know,
receiver
the extra receivers, because the first guys he mentioned were the two true freshmen.
Right.
He mentioned Deshaun Spencer and Brian Williams. But then he said, but when Sam Turner's coming on the way he has,
yep,
that gives you another guy.
He's knocking on that 6-7 spot, I think.
Sam's another guy with good size.
Yes, he is. 6'1", close to 200, I imagine.
Over 200. Yeah, I think he was listed at 207 this past spring.
And when he was healthy last year, I was really impressed by him every time I went out there. I was surprised he wasn't farther up the depth chart before he got injured.
Yeah, I mean, because he made some great catches every time we were out there watching practice a year ago. So,
and a great kid also.
Mm-hmm.
And he talked about Trey Taylor, the is he Troy transfer?
Yes,
a small guy, right? Mm-hmm. But talked about how they really liked what he can do on special teams, and he's eligible to practice, not eligible officially to play yet,
because he's one of those guys that where the NCAA. Got that they got the stay of the TRO that allowed.
This is a different TRO than the Louisiana
that
one.
The blanket waiver from Colorado.
It's hard to keep up.
Kidding. That was a blanket waiver that just said everybody gets a fifth year. I would think, and now the NCAA is saying, all right, let's hear it case by case. I don't know. Why would they do that?
We don't have enough. I just want to throw some more money away at it, I guess.
I guess.
Billable hours are winning big time.
But, yeah, it sounded like they went and got him because of what they thought he could help them with in the return game.
Yep. And then as it goes on, maybe pick up more at the receiver position. But I think definitely as a return guy. So that'll be interesting to watch as we move forward and if he gets eligible.
Yeah. I would expect if they want him eligible, they will encourage – yeah, there to be a challenge.
So.
Go for a TRO.
You would hope so. I want to see Auburn.
Golish had sort of said that before. I mean, he'd said that about another situation that you better be prepared for that because you don't want to be playing against those guys if you could have had them.
Right. But he's got to have the support of the administration to do that, and I hope they are supporting him in that. I think Auburn needs to start being aggressive in those matters when they have an opportunity to.
This doesn't seem like it's anything that you'd go, well, I don't know how this looks.
Right.
Because, I mean, this is just a player – that played 4 years, and now everybody's getting five, saying, I'd like an opportunity to play my fifth. It's not even somebody who signed a pro contract or anything like that, which looks like it's okay now anyway. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Love for you to join us. I know that folks are excited. We'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts, any questions you have. What are your biggest concerns? What are you the most excited about? As we're just 12 days away from the opening kick against Baylor in Atlanta. We'll get to our final break of hour number one here on the Monday Drive.
The Drive continues. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive, final segment of hour number one here on this Monday afternoon. And high school football got started all over the state of Alabama this past weekend. Not the greatest week locally for the teams here on the Auburn Network's family of stations. As Lee Scott with a really strange situation where they only got not even, I don't guess it was midway through the second quarter, and the game gets canceled against Glenwood, and they're down 7-0. And so that's the way it goes.
I didn't realize that.
7-0.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's tough.
Yeah.
But then a wild one over at the Duck as Auburn falls to Hewitt Trustful 56-42. A tough way. I mean, it's not a region game, but obviously some work to be done.
I didn't keep up with that game. Were there a bunch of turnovers or something? Auburn's half, the defense struggled?
I don't know. Every time I turn it on, I'd turn it on, and it'd be like another score. It was crazy at the half. I mean, my goodness, there were tons of points. Hmm. In that ball game, yeah, there were some numbers, including this week's Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week.
All right.
Quez Johnson from Auburn High, senior, had 7 receptions for 118 yards and a touchdown. So Quez is your Orthopedic Clinic High School Player of the Week. Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, celebrating 50 years of providing exceptional service. Check them online at theorthoclinic.com. Both teams will be looking to try to get in the win column this week. And as we said, it's week zero in college football. Some ACC games. You've got the whatever they call the preseason game over in Ireland, which is, I mean, is becoming, you know, it's sort of becoming a tradition there. Yeah. And the
North Carolina TCU.
I heard a little talk about, and the thing is, the loser of that ball game has generally had a terrible season.
Yeah.
It's like it's one of those tough to get over. That's a long trip home.
Sorry, Tar Heels.
If you lose, that is a long trip. Yeah, sorry about that, Bill.
I mean, that could be a blowout, in my opinion. I don't know how good TCU is going to be, but I don't have
I don't have a whole lot of faith in Belichick's.
And it
heels.
Looked like they had a bad offseason when it comes to their recruiting.
No kidding,
and their
whole administration. Yeah. I mean, it's like
it's a mess.
Yeah, I think it is. All right, we're halfway done here on the Monday Drive. Brian's musings coming up. Love for you to join us, though. I mean, I know it's not game week, but look, it's mock game week.
That's right.
So go ahead.
We need some mock calls.
334-321-1390. Come on in and join us in hour number two.
Capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Monday Drive. Hope everybody doing well. Had a good weekend. We had fun. We went to Atlanta. Let's see. I know why I couldn't keep up with everything. Friday night, we had one of our granddaughters, because son Scott and his wife Amanda both had birthdays recently, and so they celebrated going to Atlanta to see Chris Stapleton, Lainey Wilson, and Ashley McBride,
nice.
Who were at Mercedes-Benz Friday night. So they went. They went and spent the night Friday night. We had Sarah, and then Saturday we went over to Atlanta. Went back to Chastain Park and saw the OJs and the Isley brothers, and wow. They're still going pretty strong.
That's good.
I was really impressed. So that's sort of what we did over the weekend. Hope everybody had a good weekend. I could stand it to rain at my house. It has rained over on this side of town a little bit. Y'all have gotten a little bit of rain.
Maybe a touch.
A
not
little.
Much.
We haven't gotten rain in over a week.
Wow.
My grass is getting crunchy. I've got hydrangeas that are withering.
Uh-oh.
It's like, yeah, that's not good. So we can stand a little bit of rain. We're getting closer and closer to college football. Week zero this week with some games. We'll take a look at some of those here in a little while. Auburn is going through mock game week. Alex Golish gave us a lot of the details and the thoughts that go into that, and they make a lot of sense.
Yeah, they do.
As Auburn getting ready for its season opener against Baylor, no question, Brian, that Alex Golish seems pretty pleased with where his team is as far as preparation and where he'd like to be with these guys getting ready for the season.
Yeah, I think last week when we talked to him, we talked about situational awareness, I think
right.
It was. I don't think he brought that up.
The time before he'd talked about tackling, and mm-hmm. one of the first things he mentioned was how much better the tackling was. I am sure, just from the way he kept on and on about situational awareness, mm-hmm. that has been something that they have been reminded
yeah.
of time and time again.
And, he was asked about the offense, and really, his biggest concerns were just talking about the youth of the depth, mm-hmm. right? Like, it felt good about
the
starters.
Yeah, he said 11 on 11. He feels really
right.
good.
Right, and that's interesting to know. We'll see what that looks like on the field. But, you know, I mean, there have been some Auburn teams with some injury luck that have managed to put almost 11 on 11 or 11 guys out there most games, right? And those seasons usually end up pretty good for Auburn.
Well, I mean, you know you're going to have some depth, and they have depth at running back, at tight end, and receiver.
Yes, but at receiver, that depth
it's
is young, right?
But at running back and tight end, you've got some experience.
Veterans, yes, you do.
That'll be interesting, but that would include the offensive line. So,
yes.
I mean, I think he feels like he's okay. And I've had some folks go, yeah, but he was at South Florida. He was at South Florida, and he beat Florida in
right.
Gainesville and played Miami pretty well offensively, and he was at Tennessee before that.
Right, right. So, yeah.
It's not that he doesn't have any idea of what it's like in the SEC.
No, I don't think he's going to be surprised by anything. I think he understands, you know, mm-hmm. what he's going up against and what he'll face. And really, the SEC, he was in, I guess, 5 years ago or so at Tennessee, whenever it was.
It's
4 years ago.
Yeah.
Okay. It's probably not as top-heavy as it was. I mean, it's probably more top-heavy then than it is now, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Spread out more because of everything that's going on.
When he was the offensive coordinator at Tennessee, that's the best offensive numbers that Josh Heupel's Tennessee's
yep.
teams have put up.
Yeah, that tells you something.
Not that they've been bad since,
right.
but I mean they were really, yeah. really good with Golish as the OC. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And Philly Fanatic gets us going.
Hey
man, how you doing?
How's it going?
Pretty good.
It's too hot, man.
It is indeed.
Heat index over 100 every day.
That's
yep.
wild.
Yeah, it was like 110 over the weekend.
Oh, man. I want to change the narrative to something I really like, and I know you like it too, Bill. Little League Baseball.
Oh, yeah. Brian was just asking, and we were checking a little while ago on when.
I think it's tonight at 6:30.
The Phoenix City team plays today against, what did you say, Mid-Atlantic?
Yeah.
I think so.
I'll mention her in a minute, but. You remember when we played Little League, 12-year-olds look like 12-year-olds.
Yes.
These 12-year-olds, they are so big. They are so strong.
That pitcher
they look like 18
yesterday?
Years old.
You've got 6'2", 6'3",
unbelievable.
12-year-olds.
These guys
out there.
Are ready for college.
There was a pitcher for Iowa that was just, he had 15 strikeouts, and he hit this bomb of a home run in their win. I watched some of that yesterday. I don't remember what his name was, though. The kid
yet.
Was a chunk, though.
Yeah.
He could mash and throw.
You're going to mention Kinley Rasmus.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just unbelievable.
She really
is. If there's an NIL to go into college, she's definitely going to get it. All she has to do is change her motion from overhand to underhand. I mean,
Heck, she may be able to stay with the overhead. I mean, you know, she's throwing 73 or something now.
Playing shortstop and starting pitcher for that team, which is really good.
And got a great swing, too, doesn't she? I mean, I'm telling you.
When we played, you just threw it faster.
Yeah, that's right.
Pitches, the ball's going in every direction possible.
Well, I mean, she has. I mean, those bloodlines know a little bit about competing in baseball. I'm you know, from Tony to Kobe and Corey. Yeah,
was it Kobe that was committed to or signed with Auburn back in the day before he?
Kobe was.
Kobe was, right. Okay. Been a minute because he's already had a major league career.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
That's another thing. Like, it seems like that was what, 6-7 years ago. It was actually like 20 years ago, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
What is it about Phoenix City that has such great teams in every sport? And it's not that big a place, is it?
It's pretty good size. I mean,
the Rasmuses have been just so talented baseball players, Russell County, Phoenix
City. But no, he's right. I mean, at the talent that has been there, you know, part of it, I wonder, I mean, Columbus is one of the larger cities in Georgia. You just may have a better opportunity playing sports at Central than you do at some of the Columbus schools. Tex might be somebody to give us a little insight on that.
Okay. So I'm going to go with my muse, and I'm going to go with that 80s rock group Guns N' Roses.
I heard of it.
So tell me their only number one song. And it wasn't Welcome to the Jungle.
Right, no.
No,
I was thinking maybe it's,
what
was the big single from their second album that came out? Like,
Give Up?
I just can't remember the name of it. I should know it, but I just can't.
Okay. It's, Sweet Child of Mine.
Oh, okay. I was thinking that Sweet was Child the first of Mine, album. But yeah.
but that, I mean, that's a that's that album, a that's a cover, right? That was
yeah,
a,
I think so.
Yeah.
So off that song was November Rain, and that album Paradise City.
Right.
You know that? Remember the name of the album? Top album.
Oh, the first one.
That had all those songs on it. Even the Welcome to the Jungle was on that song.
Oh. I had the album. I'm looking at it.
It was.
Appetite for Destruction album? That's it. Yep.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about. Appetite for Destruction. Great, great songs on there. I love Axl Rose, and Slash.
I have an embarrassing Guns N' Roses story. Do you want to hear it?
Sure.
Okay. Good for it. Go for it.
It's 1987, I think. Maybe it's spring '88.
87 is when
I think it's spring 88.
Okay, because I think the album came out in 87.
Okay, but I don't think anybody really knew about him yet much. But anyway, I could have my ears wrong. Me and my buddies were in school at Auburn. We're going over to I forget where it was in Georgia. It was a small city in Georgia. Motley Crue is on their Girls tour. I think it's the one where the drum set, he comes out and spins around, does lots of crazy things. So we go there. And I don't know if we knew who was opening, but Guns N' Roses opened.
Wow.
And we had no idea who they were. None of us did. I mean, we're college kids. We should know these things. And then I think...
Well, they just come out with their first album, though. I mean...
And I think a few months later, we're like, oh, my God, Guns N' Roses is awesome. How did we not, like, get into it more?
Well, when you were there, what did you think of them when you were there? Because, I mean,
half the people there were screaming for Motley Crue to come out.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
I've been to some shows where you go there and you don't know who the opening act is. And they blow away the
I was not. I don't know. It just didn't. I just feel embarrassed by my not getting into it then, not realizing what I was seeing. So I did not, in fact, go, oh, my God, they're incredible. Who is this?
Yeah.
I missed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame must have liked them.
Yeah.
Because they're in there.
Well, I mean, they basically took over rock music there for, you know, 89-ish, 90, you know, right around that area for a little while before everything changed with Nirvana, of course.
That's right. Okay, well, it's good talking to you, and I agree with everything you said. The Golish looks like it's going to move Auburn around. I saw today on they looked at the sports writers, and they wanted to give the highs and lows as far as what they – with the ceiling – mm-hmm. The one guy had the low for Auburn's win is 4, and then the high was all the way up to 9. And then the consensus was somewhere in between six wins and nine wins. But I think seven or eight is more probably what they're going to be.
No, I mean, well, I would think that's what they should. I mean, Auburn should have won more than six games the last few years.
Yep, but here we are.
No, you're right. So, I mean, this is we'll see if they can come closer to their potential.
Beat Florida and go 4-0 in September, and you're feeling much better about Auburn's chances to get seven wins.
If you do that, then Auburn's got a really good shot of winning eight.
Yeah.
If they go 4-0 in September.
Well, I think the fans will be just happy enough that Auburn doesn't get run out in any games, especially Alabama.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't want to be doing that in year three like Auburn did last year. They didn't get run out in any games last year. But,
that's right.
But early on, being competitive, I mean, I think
the worst loss was Georgia, right? And was that 10
points?
Yeah, that
was 10.
14?
That was 10.
10 points.
That was
10. That's
yeah.
They were actually so close. I mean, we got tired of hearing it, but they were close.
Yeah.
In some ways.
Yeah, in the last 5 minutes, they're always three and out.
That's exactly right. Could not finish.
Points and wins the game.
Inability to finish.
Yeah, and the inept offense. I mean, it was the defense that kept them in those games.
It really was.
Yeah.
They hit a lot of field goals where they scored a good shoot card touchdown.
Yep.
That kills
red
you.
Zone.
You lose four points every time you do that.
And that's why Golish was asked about red zone today, and he seems to feel pretty darn good.
He sure does.
About their red zone.
You know, Gus always said you got to run in the red zone, and
course,
I agree
with
him.
Of course, Freeze talked about, he was really confident in the red zone.
Mm.
You got to get a push off the offensive line when you're down there and you need a first down or a touchdown. You got
to
get the three
you got to be able to run the ball.
You've
got to be physical, a little more physical when you're down there. The field tightens up, the area tightens up.
All right, it was good talking to you, and War Eagle.
Yeah, take care, Joe. Good hearing from you. I was thinking when you were talking about that, it's like way back in one of the Coliseum 71-72 in the Coliseum. Was when we had a run of great shows, there were a few times. The one that really, really sticks out to me is nobody was familiar with this band. Not that they became a super, superstar band. They're not a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame band. But Black Oak, Arkansas, with Jim Dandy was the lead singer. That was they did a cover of that was huge.
Huh.
They came in and they opened and were so, so much better than Iron Butterfly, who did Inagata De Vita. They were awful.
I think people to this day that don't know Auburn that well and look back at all the acts that played at Beardy's back in the day would just be amazed.
Man, in the 70s, there was an unbelievable run. Yeah. Unbelievable run. Those were two of the lesser names.
Yeah.
I mean, but it felt like at least once a month we had somebody, big name, you know, Rod Stewart, Elton, Eagles.
Elvis.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
I was an usher. For Elvis.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. That's cool.
Oh, yeah.
This was Elvis during the 70s era, right? With the
This is Big Elvis.
Big Elvis, yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
But still incredible artist, though, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No question. 334-321-1390. We'll get to our first break of hour number two. We got more calls coming in. Don't forget, we'll do Brian's musings around the bottom of the hour. So come on in and join us. Here on the Monday Drive.
I think you'll get it.
This is Auburn baseball coach Butch Thompson, and you're listening to The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Just looking at some of the concerts at the Coliseum. And then you had still within the next year and a half, James Taylor, Bruce Springsteen, Gordon Lightfoot, and Buffett.
Mm.
We had an unbelievable younger son. Matt worked for the Coliseum crew for a while for Keith Bagwell over there. And when they were, cleaning some of the stuff up, he came across like posters and signage for some of the. For some of the concerts back then, and so he's got some cool collector's items.
The only concert I remember going to over there was Jimmy Buffett. I know I probably missed some, or maybe I'm not remembering some back in the '80s when I was a student. But yeah, it's just incredible, incredibly great. I mean, like great artists have been there. Yeah,
334-321-1390 is the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And who have we got next? Oh, sorry about that. Who've we got?
This is John.
Hey, John, you would know a little bit about concert or two.
Well, I was going to tell you my very first concert, and I can't believe my parents let me go, was that Black Oak, Arkansas and Lion Butterfly. That was the very first concert I saw over there.
Wow. And was I not right? Did they not blow Iron Butterfly away?
By far. And it got to be the most the last 45 minutes.
Well, I think that's pretty much all they could play. Well, now, remember, though, the drummer for Iron Butterfly wasn't there. I think they had the drummer from Blues Image or something playing for them. But
still,
right,
memory.
Exactly.
That's incredible.
Wow. Mike Panera from Blues Image became part of Iron Butterfly as well.
Uh-huh.
But the other, well, I saw two other concerts over there where the opening band just crushed. I'm sure there are a lot more. But I went to see Bachman Turner Overdrive and Climax Blues Band open for them.
Oh, yeah.
Were much better. But the one, the all-time, I'd never heard of the opening band, and there are three bands listed, is Marshall Tucker, the headliner.
Mm-hmm.
Cowboy, who I love, was the second band. But a little band named Little Feet opened.
Oh, wow.
I'd never heard of them, and that became my favorite band of all time.
Oh, man, no kidding. What a great show. What a great show. It's not like the other bands sucked there, though. So.
Oh, no. That Little Feet, Springsteen show was a free concert over there.
Yeah, it was.
And there were less than 1,000 people out there.
Unbelievable.
And if you go back and look at some of those old posters Scott got, the price on the tickets was like $7 for three or four bands, It's crazy.
I think, as a matter of fact, when the Eagles came through, well, not Elton. I think Elton was $5, and we were front row.
Right. I was there for that one, and I had a poster from the Commodores and LTD, and I think it was a $7 ticket.
Oh, man.
And that was after the Commodores were pretty big.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's crazy to think, and people don't believe you when you tell them. Like I said, Elton John, Crosby, Stills, Nash, James Taylor, you just go on and on.
Well, Stephen Stills came out wearing a Pat Sullivan jersey. That's right.
That's right. That's right. But anyway, bringing back some good memories, and there were some great shows. But I think back then it wasn't the UPC. I think they let promoters book the concerts there. And, once they started doing the UPC, I think they were trying to please everybody.
Yeah, I guess. I thought when Skip Bishop was the guy, though, that was when he was with UPC, they had a really good run. But that you're right. Those were some great shows. And you know what? That's what the Coliseum was at its best. The sound was so much better, I thought, for concerts than it was for basketball.
It really was. All right, guys. Well, enjoy listening to you. And once again, thanks, Pat and Dan, and all those great folks from Sky Bar for sponsoring the hotline.
Great hearing from you, John. That is great stuff. Oh, and that reminds me to mention that we will be on the road again. It was going to be tomorrow. We've been moved to, but next Tuesday, we're going to be live at the Graduate. For the drive with we'll be on the rooftop War Eagle Supper Club next Tuesday. So Jason Caldwell and I,
he was actually talking about that with me. So
looking forward to that. So so that is next Tuesday. So you can come out and love for you to join us.
Nice.
Yep. 334-321-1390. That's the drive hotline. We've sort of been musing along here, a little musical tour here in hour number two. I'm trying to think how we get back into what we had been talking about. But I mean, hey, we'll go whatever direction. It's not game week. It's just mock game week.
That's right. But we got to take you seriously, Bill. We can't be joking around.
Well, I don't know.
Get a good routine.
I told him on Doug's show, I don't care. People can mock me. That's fine. They're definitely taking it serious this week.
They are. We're just writers and sportscasters and such, and we can have fun with it.
Yeah, one of the things I had thought, if I had another question, because Jason first asked my question. I was going to ask, because that's what I wondered. I wondered about, mock week, where, the idea came from and what all goes into it and things like that. And that was appropriately the first question. So when it came back around, I mean, I did ask about the O-line, but I was wondering, and maybe we'll find out. But, I mean, Alex Gulish sort of gave us a clue. He said, physically, Auburn's in pretty good shape. Didn't sound like anything serious. They came out of the preseason camp with no more serious injuries.
Right.
Obviously, J.J. Falk is the injury that occurred during camp.
Yep.
Ty Buster just before camp, and those are the – those are the two guys that are out long-term, along with Devin Williams, we knew before camp.
We did.
But those are the only guys that we know of that are out for a long-term.
Period, or maybe this – maybe I think Ty Buster is mid-season, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. He's expected back some at some point.
And then J.J. end of the season or –
yeah, maybe end of the season or postseason.
Right, if there is.
Yeah, you hope there's postseason.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something you used to just take for granted.
You did.
You know? I mean, it's like, well, he'll be back for the postseason.
I do remember
hopefully we'll be around
days.
In the postseason.
Yes. I do remember those days.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, look, it's one of those things that at times you start just taking it for granted and expecting, oh, we're going to be – I remember very well hearing fans back in the 80s, they were tired of going to New Orleans, tired of the Sugar Bowl.
Yeah.
It's like, man, we do that. It's like, we always go there. We can go. And I heard, we can go there anytime. Sure, you can. Maybe your team won't, but you can go there. I mean, you can buy tickets and go. But, yeah, you just don't take those things for granted. I think hopefully the last 5 years have taught us that.
Yeah, I bet they have. Although I don't think people are excited as much for bowl games anymore.
No, you're right.
But just having a competitive team and a winning record.
Now, look, if Auburn were to be able to play in, you know, Orlando or Tampa or something like that, I wouldn't be torn up that you're, you know, it'd be great if you're not in the playoff, but you could play in a quality bowl game. Now,
sure.
I don't know, I'd be too thrilled. Who was it? Golly, somebody had a bowl projection today that had Auburn in Birmingham. That's like,
oh, God, no, not again.
You know, it's better than not being in a bowl, I guess.
Yeah.
But that could mean you're 6-6 and you could lose and you'd be 6-7 again.
Right. Last time they were there, they lost to Houston, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a rough game.
Yeah. So, I mean, but hopefully there is. Anyway, Ty should be back. But it sounds like that was the other question. I was just wondering if there's anybody – who's questionable maybe for the first game.
Sure doesn't seem like it unless they're, you know. I mean, he said there weren't. He said there were no other major injuries.
So. No other majors. But, I mean, there may be a couple of guys that they might not be working full
speed.
We'll
get a look at them.
We'll get a chance tomorrow.
Yep, so that'll be good. So, and I think every week we'll be able to go out there on a Tuesday and get a short look at the team and everything. So.
Yeah. Now there's going to be less access, obviously, once the season gets going. Because, I mean, that's pretty much – let's see. That's pretty much it for this week, right? I mean, we're gonna have Monday press conferences and probably a Tuesday viewing window with some players.
Yeah, and there'll be one other thing we can talk about off the air, I think. But that is the major stuff, yes.
334-321-1390. Before we get to our bottom of the hour break, let's get back to the drive hotline. And Bill is up next. Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. We were talking about bowl games, and both you guys go back a long way, almost as long as me.
Brian's not as old as we are, Bill.
I'm catching up.
I think even you, Bill, are a little older.
I know.
We have not been to the Gator Bowl since 1974. There's got to be a reason for that, because Auburn always, you know, there's got a lot of people that are.
Oh, there are a ton of Auburn folks in the Jacksonville area. Well, the Gator Bowl lost its automatic tie-in with the SEC for years, and then you had to go fill all the obligated those bowls that you had an obligation to with a conference team, and have an extra team before you'd be able to get to the Gator Bowl.
And that was strange, because, you know, there have been years we were not recently.
No, but see, that's what happened.
We had enough wins to really, and we always took a good crowd to get a bowl.
Oh, yeah.
And we just never, I was just surprised we never got anything.
Well, it's because there for a while, you know, well, first of all, in the 80s, Auburn was too good.
Yeah.
When Auburn was winning its share of five conference championships, they were better than the Gator Bowl was hoping to get. And then it got to the point where there was more money to go to Orlando or Tampa.
Right.
like I was just saying a couple of minutes ago, than it was to go to Jacksonville. It just paid more.
Yeah, and back when bowls were big, Auburn as a fan base would often get upgraded a bowl or a tier just because they would turn out and buy the tickets. And they would show up.
Yeah, so if you
up.
Got an opportunity, look, I'd rather go to Jacksonville than go to Dallas. Right. I mean, you know, especially in January when it was, you know, so freezing cold a couple of times. But I mean, if you had an opportunity to go to the Cotton Bowl or go to the, you know, to go to Orlando or Tampa or something like that, it was more prestigious and just paid more.
And of all the bowl games we've been to, and I've been to everything you could imagine, I've never seen Auburn play in the Gator Bowl.
Wow.
I can't remember the last time they played in the Gator Bowl.
Well, he said, like you said, it was 72 and 74 they played.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's been, yeah, it's been over 50 years.
So, anyway, I thought it was kind of strange. I thought you all might have it.
Yeah.
I thought it might have been something we did.
No. I don't think Auburn left a bad impression or anything on Jacksonville by any means.
Okay. All right. Thanks. I appreciate it.
And Auburn played pretty well in the Gator Bowls too.
Okay.
334-321-1390. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Hey, we'll get Brian's musings when we come back. So stick with us here on the Monday Drive.
ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back in, final half hour of the Monday Drive. Yeah, Auburn had a long history.
Yeah.
Didn't realize Shug took six teams to the Gator Bowl. Auburn went to the Gator Bowl six times.
Dominate the Gator Bowl.
And three times there in the 70s. After the 70, 72, and 74 seasons, winning all three. The Pat Sullivan, Archie Manning. That
Some
was
great
a wild
players,
one.
Right.
A wild one. 35-28, I think. Or yeah, 35-28 was the final there. Archie played with a club on his arm.
Okay.
He'd broken his arm and played, but he was still unbelievable.
Of course.
That was a great game. And then after the 72 season, the Amazons won their 10th game by just drubbing Colorado 27-3. And then the 74 team beat Texas down.
And?
27th. And Earl Campbell.
Earl Campbell above.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
That's incredible.
Phil Gardner's team. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it's crazy that Auburn has not been to the Gator Bowl since.
Yeah.
All right, it is Monday, and Brian does his musings every week, athletics and then musical. What'd you have on the sports side?
Well, I don't know if we mentioned this, but I guess last week they announced Auburn had sold a program record 83,043 season tickets.
Right.
Third consecutive year, that's a record to do that. They're ending the season with a record 22 straight sellouts at Jordan-Hare.
And as a matter of fact, today Auburn announced that there are less than 1,000 tickets left for the Southern Miss game.
Oh, wow. Okay. So, yeah, they're well on the way to continuing that. And they're doing all this amidst the five-straight losing season. So
right.
I had kind of written on that before, but I wrote some more on it because I just
wanted
to.
That just tells you the support that Auburn has continued to get through, you know, lean times.
And I just don't think there are many programs out there that would do this. I just
believe
it. And I looked it up. Nebraska, 404-game sellout streak, right? That's
oh yes.
Some people said that's a record that'll never be broken, and they're probably right. And that's
because,
they've already survived.
They keep adding to it.
Yeah, and they went through seven consecutive losing seasons,
man,
from 2017 to 2023, just recently. Mm-hmm. Oklahoma's got a 153-game streak, but they've only had two losing seasons in those since 1999.
Right.
And then Georgia has a 84-game streak, no losing seasons.
No kidding.
Right. So I just think it's remarkable. Auburn people, fans, supporters, alumni, boosters all deserve a ton of credit for that. And so does the administration for making this a good place to be, right? Everybody, mm-hmm. cheerleaders, everybody, band, everybody involved should pat themselves on the back. But I also wrote a little bit about you know, the latest in the NFL with people going to NFL camp and possibly going back to you know, to college. And you know, I think we talked about it on air, but this goes back to the leadership of college athletics, the NCAA, the major conferences, Sankey, Petiti, SEC, Big Ten, just not really handling this whole process well. And you know, this to me was very foreseeable, and they have just continued down this path of wanting to dictate terms and not been willing to sit down and negotiate with players and collectively bargain. But again,
did you see that? Just reminded me. Did you see the headline on the ESPN's college football page?
I did not.
Yeah, Dan Wetzel wrote a column, and the headline is, thanks to the NCAA, the NFL waiver wire is the new national signing day.
That's spot on, really. All right, so there's not a lot of hints in my opening, so I may have to give you an extra hint here.
Okay.
But we're going back 49 years.
77.
Yes.
Okay, that's definitely in my ballpark.
Yes. Okay. It's the drug arrest of an outlaw country pioneer that inspired...
All right, drug arrest.
Drug arrest.
Okay. So it's not Merle. It's...
That inspired...
Willie or Waylon?
Got to pick one.
All right. Well, give me a little more.
Inspired a top five country hit, which chronicled...
It could be either one right now.
Which chronicled the event of the arrest.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I know this.
I almost included this in the opening, but this artist is best known for his theme song from a TV show, which
it's
he also
Waylon.
Narrated. Yes,
okay, Waylon. It's
Waylon Jennings. All right,
you could have given me the just missed the plane crash.
Gosh. Yeah, and
he was going to be on the plane.
Yes,
with
he gave his seat up to
the Big Bopper
because the Big Bopper had the flu.
Uh huh.
And I did chronicle that in here, and I don't know how many people have heard this before, but the last words he had with Buddy Holly, right? Wait, no. Yes.
Buddy Holly or the Big Bopper?
Yeah, it was his last Buddy. Words with Buddy Holly.
Yeah, he was tight with Buddy.
Yes.
He was he was one of the crickets.
Yes.
Waylon.
Bali and they got this plane because their bus was really cold. I guess it was not, you know, well put together, mm-hmm. whatever. And Holly joked with Waylon, "Well, I hope your old bus freezes up." And Waylon replied, "Well, I hope your old plane crashes."
Oh,
those are the last words he explained with Buddy Holly
last
before.
Last words you say to your friend who
And that according to, you know, other people have written on Waylon, and of course Waylon passed away. It's been
a while.
Yeah, but that affected him his whole life and led to some of his drug and alcohol abuse.
Oh man,
and all those things that
I could see
probably
that.
Shortened.
I can see that. That's something tough. You don't get over something like that.
But he did like for people my age, like when I'm 12 or 13. The TV show
Dukes of Hazzard
came out. You know, you've got cars jumping over rivers. You've got the original Daisy Dukes, right?
Oh, yeah.
A 13-year-old man is very interested in this show, so I did watch it. But I did not realize that it was Waylon Jennings that sang it and narrated it the whole time. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Boss Hogg, you got Bo and Luke Duke. You know, you had all these guys. So that was a little fun show for when it was on, I guess, during its time.
So.
Chronicled some of his top hits. Good Hearted Woman.
Good Hearted Woman's the first thing.
Willie Nelson, of course.
Yeah.
Mamas Don't Let Your Babies Grow Up to Be Cows.
Right.
Also with Willie Nelson. Ramblin' Man. Are You Sure Hank Done It This Way? So, he had, I think, 16 number one country hits. His highest charting Billboard 100 was the theme song from.
Oh, I didn't realize that. I thought
Dukes
Good Hearted Woman might have been.
Mm-mm. So it was number 21, I think, was its highest.
And then he was with the Highwaymen.
Yes, he was, and they had a number one hit, Highway Man,
mm-hmm.
which was he's with
Willie and Chris.
Willie
and
the Man in Black.
Yeah. Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah, Johnny Cash, yes. And back to the drug arrest, Packers was shipped from New York, I guess, to his place in Nashville.
cops
showed.
Was that like this date or something?
Yeah,
or?
On this day. This is what happened.
Cool. Okay.
And the cops showed up, I guess, but his drummer was there. And while the cops were waiting to come in or whatever, for whatever reason, it got flushed down the toilet. So the charges were dropped. So he's never actually faced any penalty for that. But he at that time, he did have a drug habit, some drug issues. So, yeah.
That's cool. I mean, Brian goes in all kinds of directions. I mean, we've gone from, you know, classical to, just to country to pop to rap to, I mean, we've had all kinds of stuff. Never know what direction or how far back you're going.
I think I've done all the Highwaymen now. That's 4 out of 4, I believe.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I think I did Johnny Cash for on the anniversary of his the prison, Folsom Prison. Yep, which is the famous album, right? The famous
Live
moment,
right? Folsom Prison.
Yes, and I've done the other two also.
Man. All right, great stuff. Again, that's every Monday there at auburnsports.com, just part of some of the entertainment that you'll get along with all the information. While we got a second, go ahead. Then we'll get to the phones. Let everybody know.
So we're going to continue.
Still got
our
deal going?
What?
You still got a deal going there?
Yep, still have the 75% off annual subscription this week. Check it out. You can sign up and get that right there online. It's a great, great deal. We'll continue our blowout. I guess it's not camp coverage anymore. It's mock game week coverage.
That's right.
Leading into, game week, which we'll have plenty of coverage of that. And, of course, I'll be in Atlanta in 12 more days for the big opener against Baylor, which should be a lot of fun. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Me as well. 334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline sponsored by Skybar. And I think Michael is up first. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Bill. How are you doing? Long time no see.
Yeah, doing fine.
And Brian, hello.
How you doing?
Earlier you said something about when you were talking about this mess that college sports has become, you said that the season might be over before it gets to the U.S. Supreme Court. I got to tell you, that's very optimistic. This mess will never get to the U.S. Supreme Court in this decade, the way the court system works.
No, you're right. So I just meant, just don't expect anything in a hurry.
Oh, you're right. Well, don't expect anything for years. But that's not the reason I called. You talked about three Gator Bowls, but I remember the one with Archie and Pat Sullivan, which I think on our first offensive drive, Pat did a quarterback draw for it was for a touchdown. I don't know how far out it was. And I thought, boy, this is going to be a runaway because Archie's hurt. And it turned out not to be a runaway. It was a damn shootout.
Oh, Archie was running. Archie was running around in the backfield like crazy. I mean, Brian, he'd go sideline to sideline and be able to make plays with his arm or his legs.
And that's the last time I ever saw Pat Sullivan run on a design play was in that Gator Bowl. Of course, the next year because they didn't want to get hurt. But the two Gator Bowls I wanted to talk about was the next two.
Oh, yeah.
Were you at those two?
At the first one, I don't think I went to the I think I'd sort of gotten tired of going to Jackson Bowl. But I wasn't there in the 74. I was in 72.
Well, I hadn't gotten tired of going to Jacksonville. I was at both of them. And the scores are not indicative. We beat up on both of those teams.
Absolutely dominated Colorado and Texas, and were underdogs in both games, as I recall.
Absolutely. And I can remember when Colorado ran out the field, my first thought was, these guys are big. They had a defensive back named Cullen Bryant, who was later a running back in the for the Rams.
Yeah, he was about 225, 230. You're right, yeah.
And they had another running back named Charlie Davis, who was an All-American that year. And the story I heard was at the dinner where both teams are present, Cullen Bryant and Charlie Davis are in the bathroom, and in pops David Langer. And they looked at Langer and said something to the effect, "What are you, a trainer, water boy, whatever?"
I'm surprised there wasn't a fight right then.
Well, no, these were two big boys.
That's what I mean. I'm still surprised there wasn't a fight right then. Did you ever?
Well, it happened on the next. It happened the next day or the next night when Charlie Davis went around in and supposedly Langer popped him at the line of scrimmage, and he's laying on top of him, and he looks and says, "David Langer, defensive back, Auburn Tigers." I'm sure it wasn't. If that's a true story, I'm sure the language is a little.
Yeah, I'm sure different. There was a word or two left out. would. Hey. He was something. He was a great player, but you didn't cross David Langer. I remember first time I got to see him not on the football field. Was the first time that I decided friends of mine and I decided we'd go out to the Shepherd's Purse. You know what you remember it, Michael?
Where was that?
Oh, the Shepherd's Purse.
Shepherd's Purse was out 14.
Card.
Okay. Oh yeah. Oh man, Shepherd's Purse was out 14.
All right.
And went in and I walked in the door and Langer and somebody were rolling out the door. I mean in a serious fight, but then they got up and shook each other's hand and had a beer and
wow.
Everything was fine, but I swear I don't know that there were many times that I ever went out there where I didn't see something very similar. And you didn't mess with him. I mean, he was one of those guys where he was going to prove that he was the toughest guy in the room.
I didn't know that about
was.
David Langer.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, when he was the freshman, my now accountant, who was a junior or senior, who was a defensive lineman, introduced me to Langer. And when Langer walked away, I looked at my friend and said, "What does he play?" And Dick said, "Football, he's a defensive back." And I said, "God, the future does not look good."
That's funny. Yeah.
Thanks, guys.
Great hearing from you, Michael. 334-321-1390. We'll get one more before our final break. Who we got?
Spectre.
Hey, Spectre.
All right.
Whoop. There we go. Got the button pushed. There we go, Spectre. Hey, how are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you now.
I heard you guys talking about music trivia and stuff like that. Hey, I'll give you one, Brian.
All right.
He was talking about Buddy Holly. What band was inspired by the name Buddy Holly and the Crickets?
I know.
I have no idea.
Beatles.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Absolutely. Beatles.
Wow.
But they decided to spell their, but then they decided to spell it with the A.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right. Let me ask y'all, have y'all heard of Columbia High School in Huntsville?
Yeah, Sammy.
Did y'all hear that story?
Yeah.
Yeah, they what was their losing streak? Was it 100-something, 103 games?
101 games.
Wow.
They lost 101 straight games, and Sammy Coates came in last year.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, he lost his first year. He lost the first year. But, I hate to be the team that lost to
No kidding. I mean, because, they were outscored like some ridiculous number, too, 500-something to less than,
Good for him, man.
Anyway,
I'm so happy to see that.
I'll have another trivia for you next week, Brian.
All right. That sounds great.
All right. Anyway, I just wanted to hear if y'all heard about the Columbia High School.
Yep. Yeah. Cool, Spectre. Thanks for the call.
All right, buddy.
Need to get to our final break of the afternoon. Stick with us as we wind things down here on the Monday Drive.
Let's get back to the drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Final couple of minutes here on the Monday Drive. Something I meant to mention a little while ago. I don't think we have. We know who the honorary game captains are. Pretty impressive set of game captains for the Auburn-Baylor game. Cam.
Oh,
Cam
right.
Newton
the honorary captains.
Is Auburn's captain.
I was like, who are the captains?
And RG3
that's pretty good.
Baylor. So you got a couple of Heisman Trophy winners as your honorary game captains.
Yeah, throw the ball around a little bit pregame, maybe.
Yeah, I would say.
Yeah.
That's a pretty athletic Pretty it athletic is. Pair.
Back to David Langer. Did you ever go up to him and say, how big a boy are you? Anything like that?
No.
You know? No.
No,
poke him in the chest?
No, he was. Yeah. No, I mean, he was listed at 5'9". I don't think he was 5'9".
Okay.
But no. No, you didn't.
Country
you didn't
tough. Where is he from? You know?
Birmingham. Went to Woodlawn.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah. I know that because, yeah, Floyd went to Woodlawn.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But
more stories you can tell.
Oh,
on
yeah.
The air?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No. It's just, no, he was, but what a heck of a player.
Yes.
Man, what a secondary Auburn had back then. Larry
yeah.
Willingham.
I think
he's
still,
and Dave
yeah.
Beck.
He still leads Auburn career interceptions, right?
Yeah, I think
one?
So.
Yeah.
So yeah, those, some great memories. And it was, I'm glad, glad we got asked about the Gator Bowl by Bill.
I had
that
no
sort,
idea
sort
the history there.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'd forgotten. I mean, but yes, I mean, I think about it growing up. Yeah, Auburn. There weren't that many bowls, and the Gator Bowl was pretty big. It was one of the ones that was right, you know, outside the big three or four, the Rose, the Cotton, the Sugar, and the Orange, and then the Gator was like pretty much the one, you know, if not the next, it was right there. And there weren't that many bowl games back then. It meant something
it
to
really
go to
did.
A bowl game.
It did, yep.
Things have changed.
They have.
Brian, again, got a fun week this week. We'll get an opportunity to watch a little bit of practice and talk to some players again tomorrow.
We will, and we will have full coverage of that, of course. Not sure how much video we'll get because we can only record
early practice.
Yeah, the what is it?
Period like
zero
through.
Yeah, yeah. And we get to watch one through two, but we can only record zero, which is usually stretching and stuff. We'll see. But, yeah, we'll be out there, get an idea of where everybody's lining up, maybe see some of the scout team possibly,
yeah.
And, talk to some players and have plenty of stories the rest of the week.
Looking forward to it. Brian, always great to have you in. Always fun. That's going to wrap things up for the Monday drive. Jason Caldwell in tomorrow, and we'll have fun with him as well. Hopefully you will join us. That's going to do it, though, for the Monday edition. Have a good one, everybody. We are out of here.